We're all set, Mr. Chair.
Oh, we're all set. Okay. Hey, thanks, Mr. Fussy. I guess I'd like to call the meeting order at this time. This meeting is now in session. Mary, are we recording?
Yes, we are.
Okay. Then we're off and running. If you don't mind, could you please read the roll call?
Yes, sir. On Teams, I have Scott Nelson, Danny Gojekako, Henry Cole, Master Sergeant Rodriguez, John Rockwell, Deputy Chief Keith Barron, Ross Atkinson, Carl Edwards, Bob Carter, Fire Marshal Kyle Green, Elias Barry Garland, Mickey Flores, Pete Brazell, Richard Pichai. And then in the room present, I have Lieutenant Ben Sanders, Bruce Richter, David Reed, Mark Newman, myself, Nicholas Sandstock, Carl Fussy, Scott Stormo, Tim Woodall, Evan Rockwell, and Rick Rambo. I also have Robert Reitman on team. And is that Missy Hart that's called in?
Oh, that's great.
I have two phone numbers, but one of them's Missy, so I'm going to assume that's her. And then I also, I don't know the other number that's called in.
Did I see John Kruna and Aaron Calwara?
Okay.
Hi, this is also Staff Sergeant Ray from J Bear standing in for Master Sergeant Draves.
Thank you.
Okay, if that completes the roll call, then do we have any special guests today?
Mr. Chair, this is Paul Fussy. I'd like to introduce Mr. Rick Rambo. He's the Western States Information Network Regional Information Sharing System. He'll be giving a presentation after the class. Mr. Rambo?
Good afternoon. How's it going, Ed? I'll be here talking about RIS and WISN. We do all the deconfliction for law enforcement throughout the country for operational needs and also for their targets.
Okay, thank you, sir. I'm looking forward to that presentation. And with that, then we can move on to the approval of the previous meeting minutes. There was a lot in there. If you all had had a chance to read those, are there any requested changes or any questions about the minutes at this time? And hearing nothing, at this time, could I get a motion and a second to approve the March meeting minutes?
John Rockwell, motion to approve.
Thank you, John. And a second?
This is Tammy. I'll second.
Thank you, Tammy. Hearing no objections to that, let's see, the motion's passed. So we can move on to the issues and risk log now. Mr. Fussy?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So everyone, as we look at the issues and risk log, last month with the R1 North battery plant, I wanted to leave it on there just a little bit, make sure everything's running smoothly with the new upgrade. I've talked to Mr. Rose, my counterpart there for Motorola. It's working really well, so I would like to remove that from issues and risk log pending approval from the board.
Okay. Are there any objections to that? And do we need to do a motion for removing that?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Well, hearing no objections, can I get a motion and a second to remove that from the issues and risk log?
John Rockwell, motion to remove it from the issues and respond.
Thank you, John. And a second?
Henry Cole, a second.
Thank you, Henry. Any objections? Hearing none, we can remove that from the issues and risk log. Thank you, Mr. Fussy. Any other questions regarding the issues and risks? Okay, hearing nothing, let's move on to the action items.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Once again, this is Paul Fussy. We're still working with Motorola to find a time to set up a training session for everyone on the APX Next. So once we have that finalized through Mr. Pixa, we'll let everyone know and we'll get that training out for everyone for the user council. Just for informational, the APSCS team is still working with DPS and a couple other entities on their APX Next on that. So we're still doing training on there with Scott and his team. But once we get that finalized, we'll have everyone sign up for the meeting and the training.
Okay, that's great. Thank you, Mr. Fussy. Is that it for action items?
That is correct, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Any questions concerning the action items for the group? Hearing nothing, I think we can move on to the operational management office updates. Mr. Fussy, again, would you go ahead and provide those for us? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon, everybody. So with the training, Dan Nelson, he's working on completing a training video on batteries, and we're posting it to AMR website soon. And with the batteries, there's several different models out there and different milliamps, anywhere from 3,200 milliamps up to 5,000. And we do get calls from the field on if batteries are working or it was working before. And so we've been educating people on how to recalibrate batteries and when it gets really cold out, going up to higher milliamps. So that's going to be the focus of that training video, and we'll let everybody know when that one's out there. But that video is being generated from calls from the field. So for outreach, good news, we've been talking to different agencies, and now as of last 24 March, the Sadovia Tribe are now members of Alaska Land Mobile Radio for their Barabara Heights Fire Department. So we just completed the paperwork on there. So that's one more organization that's on ALMR. I attended the Alaska 2025 statewide national disaster exercise. That had agency representatives from across the state, a DOD, state, local, municipal. So I was there with two engineers from Scott's team to answer ALMR questions. And that was set out for the 9.2 earthquake. And please unmute your screen. Thank you. I'm getting a little bit of feedback. This coming April 3rd, 4th, which is tomorrow and Friday, there is a cyber resilient 911 workshop that is scheduled from 9 to noon both days at the State Crime Lab. That's going to be hosted by CISA and the Cybersecurity Infrastructure Security Agency. So I've signed up for that. I know some of the other dispatch managers have. So if you haven't, we'll get with the cybersecurity folks for CISA and sign up for that if there's still seats available. And for outreach, I attended the monthly APOA meeting yesterday. Really good guest speaker. And the Alaska Geo Summit is being held April 9th through 11th at the Nina Center downtown. They'll have different agencies on there, so I'll be there in attendance to answer any ALMR questions. Moving over to the upgrade, the monthly Zone 1 offsite storage inspection was completed on March 24th. I completed that report and turned all that in. It went really well. So what that is required by contract, I make sure that the system is being backed up weekly And in case something ever happens, we can regenerate everything. So that was completed and passed. And also mentioned earlier, the Smart Connect location push-to-talk testing is still ongoing with the APX Connect radios and GPS. March document reviews. We had SMO customer support plan, virus protection policy, record management policy and procedure, system backup and recovery policy and procedure, and system key usage policy and procedure. So kind of heavy on those this month. And once Mary and I complete our reviews, then it's sent over to Nick and his team. And then Mr. Reed, our security manager, double checks on everything, make sure there's any updates to it. But with nothing major to update, just a few things here and there, Mary, I'll be posting those to the website. And the way it's set up, in case anyone's not familiar with the policies and procedures, unless there is something major, upgrade or addition, then it does not go to the user console itself for approval. And Mr. Chair, if you'll bear with me, what I'd like to add into on record are, we start looking at the outages, and this is taken right out of our policy and procedure and outages under section 2.5 on user. So Nick and his team and Scott and the SATS team do a really good job of making sure the system is up and running and we have very few outages. However, it's not just us and our team that's responsible. It's all of our users too. So sometimes we'll get calls from the field, well, this area hasn't worked for months. We don't know what we don't know. So reading into on the record, responsibility for ensuring a functioning interoperable communication system that meets the technical and operational requirements of ALMR member agencies lies with all users of the system, not just those who manage and maintain it. Service outages must be reported as soon as they are discovered. When difficulties with radio operations occur, users should document date, time, specific location, radio serial number and alias, radio ID, and the difficulties experienced. This information should then be routed to the help desk so all data can be analyzed and findings reported back to the customer. For example, an unusually high rate of system busies may be an indication of a site or channel outage, and this should be reported to the help desk as soon as possible. So just to reiterate, we do our best to keep the system up and running, but sometimes we don't know what we don't know. So recommend everybody take a look at the outage policy and procedure and read through that. So we're all here to help each other. So any questions on what I've read or talked about before? Do I go to the systems metrics?
I hear nothing, Mr. Fussy, so I think you can go ahead.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Moving over to the metrics. So, excuse me, I apologize. So our calls for March, 1,542,345. The push-to-talk, 2,443,918. Monthly busies were 214, which is three zeros and a 1%. So really good on that one. Subscriber count, 32,426. And like I started a while ago, we're going to break those down. So local municipal, 12,118. DOD, 9,877. Federal, 1,847. State of Alaska, 8,570. As I mentioned back in March, I was reaching out to agencies and entities that had a lot of radios that haven't been on the system for at least a couple of years. I want to say thank you to the agencies that turned in the subscriber request and had those removed. So that opened up, give us more breathing room, if you will. So we're still working on that, sending out those emails, but we did get subscriber requests back to have some radios removed that haven't been on there for a long time. So I just want to thank those agencies who are responding with that. So that helps us out in the long run with our FCC licensing. So sites below 3.9, we did have 8. And you can see the numbers have been dropping from January, February, and March. So hopefully that'll keep dropping, but we do have the PMIs coming up. As we look at the sites below 3-9, microwave upgrades were clear in Fort Greeley. Storm damage, that was that big windstorm, was Pillar Mountain and Woman's Bay. Those are all up and back and running. And then others, Goose Creek was PMI, Henny Range was commercial circuit issues, Seward was microwave, and Thicken was a GCI emergency repair of the undersea cable, which obviously we can't do anything about. That's all I have for the metrics, Mr. Chair. Pending any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Fussy. Does the council have any questions at this time?
Mr. Green has his hand up, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Green. Go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. I'd like to make a request to the chair, if I may, regarding those statistics on subscriber unit distribution.
Yes, sir.
Could we ask that either a slide be added to the metrics packet, or those are specifically recorded in the minutes for the meeting? I'm interested in that. And a second part to that is, do we or are we able to identify which zones those? Well, I guess that can operate across any zones, but if they have a primary association, just grouped by the different zones. That makes sense.
Through the chair, Mr. Green, I'd be happy to add a slide for you. That's an easy fix. We can do that for you starting next month, if that's okay. And I'm getting a head shake from Mr. Finance Stack that we could split it up into the zones for you.
All right. Awesome. Thank you. I appreciate that. That I think will be another little bit of tidbit information to know where the distribution is and the activity of the different zones. So thank you.
Through the chair, Mr. Green, with your permission, what I'll do is create some slides and send them to you to take a look at to make sure I'm covering what you're looking for.
Yeah, if we can just make sure the chair is involved, I appreciate that. That what you proposed sounds great already, so thank you.
All right. Through the chair, thank you, Mr. Green. I'll work on that.
All right, and so, thank you. Oh, sorry, go ahead, Mr. Cuffey.
So, Mr. Chair, I'll just finish up with the other. So, myself and personnel from APSCS, we were at the International Wireless Communications Expo. That was in March 16th to the 21st. The first 2 days were spent going through sessions and learning about the new items that are coming out and lessons learned. And then we spent 2 whole days talking to the different vendors. And that went from towers, tower lights, shelters, solar backup, generators, routers, everything to do with ALMR. So that was really good conference down there. And a lot of networking, and through that I've worked with a couple of radio manufacturers, and we're setting up some testing for one of the manufacturers to get some radios approved on ALMR. So it was really good on that one. ALMR newsletter will be sent out on April 15th. The ALMR Executive Council meeting will be on April 17th. And then also, the 2025 Annual Emergency Management Conference is going to be held at the Egan Center, April 15th to the 17th. I presented there last year on ALMR, but this year I won't be presenting, but I'll be there to answer any ALMR questions and go from there. Also, April 24th, CISA is hosting an undersea telecom cable threat briefing at the State Crime Lab. And Mr. Reed, our security manager, completed a Windows modem patching report. So I've reached out to quite a few people, but if we can have everyone just reboot their consoles to accept the latest update, because some consoles are up to 5 months delinquent. So I'll be reaching out to you, those individuals. Obviously, I'm not going to name them out here on record, but make sure that when you get the information to reboot your console. And then a final comment, Mr. Chair, is the National Public Safety Telecommunicators Week. Sorry about that. Let me try that one more time. National Public Safety Telecommunicators Week is April 13th to the 19th. So I just want to say thank you to all the dispatchers and dispatch centers out there that keep everyone safe. And that's all I have, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Fussy. And I got to admit, even our own console in DHSEM was a few months out of date, which was a surprise because we thought it was up to date. It kind of fooled us. So, yeah, if you have an opportunity to take a look at your console, you might want to do that and just reboot because we thought we were up to date and we weren't. So, anyway, thank you for that brief. Any other questions regarding the system management? Okay, not hearing nothing. The next item is going to be the state and DOD updates. Mr. Stormer, are you online?
Point of order, Mr. Chair. This is Paul Fussy. Mr. Feinstock has to get his SMO overview first.
Oh, it's correct. Sorry. Sorry, I went right over you. Sorry, sir. Go ahead.
Thank you. And as Paul mentioned, about the policies and procedures, there's actually one I kind of want to bring up. Now, I'm not trying to act like I know more than anyone else. I'm sure everyone in this meeting has probably been in Alaska way longer than I have, but the catastrophic natural event policies and procedures, more specifically dealing with the Mount Burr volcano, just take a look through it, make sure you're prepared, that your people can be protected, they're safe, the proper N95 masks, plastic sheets, et cetera, et cetera. I'm not saying it's going to erupt when none of us know, obviously, but it better be prepared than not. So just take a look over the policy procedure of that, and maybe you'll learn something. I don't know. I did.
To the chair, I have a question. It's Mr. Woodall. That was a question I was going to bring up during the DOD time. So as we look at our infrastructure, does the Operations Management Office, or Motorola for that fact, have specific measures that we should be taking in terms of blocking air intake or putting filters or covering systems? So we're trying to be prepared. So as we do that, we need to put together an action plan. So how we would address that. Are you guys addressing that? Certainly, you're not going to come on an installation to do that, but is there something going to be put out on how to protect the infrastructure should we have an ash fall?
Through the chair, Mr. Woodall. So Nick's team, they do have contingency kits. We have some down here, and we have them up in Fairbanks also if we need to deploy to the sites. And we've been talking about it up actually here in 92. When Spur went off, so I remember it very well, what happened. So we've been briefing each other, but I can put out a notice, if you will, or an action plan, just a small one with some talking points on there, what people need to do. But Nick and his team have been getting ready and double checking our contingency kits to make sure they're ready to go.
Yeah, I'm concerned that we take the proper measures. Because we don't know exactly what needs to be protected on the infrastructure at this point. So we would need you guys to give us pretty explicit instructions to go into the shelter, do this, or take this action or that action. So that one, we have the materials in place. Two, we have a written SOP that we can implement should the event occur. And is the system going to be shut down? Do you anticipate the system to continue to operate? So those are a number of questions for mission assurance perspectives that we have.
Some of those questions are answered in the policies and procedures. There's a list of critical sites, that things would be shut down, kind of what areas would be shut down first, kind of, or addressed to first. Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit of what you're asking already in that policy procedure.
I've seen that, but in terms of at an infrastructure owner's site, mm-hmm. What do you want us to do to protect that specific site infrastructure, I guess, is the question.
So through the chair, Mr. Ward, I'll make an outwork on that, and we'll get it out there.
Yeah.
I'll just add a few things to that. We also have some kits that we've created. It really is going to depend on what is happening. If it gets all the way to the point where we lose power, which is unlikely, but it could happen. This building will run on generator until it doesn't, because it's got to have a bunch of ash to its filter and plugs up. And so, I don't want to say plan for the worst, but you should be ready for the worst just in case that happens. But it's possible that this Tudor Road zone control gets shut down because the HVACs are plugged up and can't cool the rooms, or the generator goes down and we've lost power. And there's really nothing we can do if that happens. So I just, this is an opportunity to kind of talk through your PACE plan as to what you would do if you lose that. And frankly, if we get to that point, we lost cell phone coverage and a whole lot of other stuff too. So
right.
I just use this as an opportunity to think through how you would act and respond in those worst case scenarios. But we really don't want to have to shut any sites down, but these things aren't airtight. A lot of them, and if they are airtight, you run the risk of plugging up your air conditioning, which is going to cause you problems to the heat inside the shelter. But we're hoping there's not a lot of ash in the air, because we've got crossflow ventilation that has got filters in it. But again, it's not an airtight seal filter, so it's going to rapidly be sucking ash around the filter and the air gaps, and putting a bunch of stuff inside the shelters that we don't really want inside the shelters. What I've read is it's probably not super harmful for equipment, but it's not like anyone is sitting around testing this in a lab somewhere to know that. And I don't know how much you can volcanic gas you can get on electronics before you have problems. And we have a wide range of electronics that's in there, some of which may handle it just fine and some of which may not. And again, there's not good research out there to know what that case will be. I do know if it gets hot inside the shelter, that's a problem. And it is very likely, if there's a lot of ash in there, we're going to plug up ventilation filters or even have to try to shut that down. If we had to shut that down, we probably can't run the site. And to make this even harder, we've had to talk through this. It's like, well, how do you shut down a site? We don't really do that. Telecom equipment is made to run the moment power is available. It doesn't have an on-off switch. So you've got to kill the commercial power, then you've got to kill the generator, make sure that doesn't start, then you've got to disconnect the batteries, make sure that doesn't provide power to the site. So, and you have to do all that on site. You can't do any of that remotely. So, and can we drive when this is happening? How bad is it? There's a lot of stuff that we've tried to help as to what we could do. And I prepare for the worst, hope for the best, but be ready that it's possible there's going to be interruptions to AMR and a whole lot more than that. So.
Yeah, we're doing that. The other question I have is: there a should we have an ash fall, and so we're planning to protect equipment for the ash fall. But post the ash fall, do we have a plan for site inspection and cleanup? So is Motorola going to come out, or are your techs going to come out and inspect the sites? Are we going to change the filters? Do we need to purchase new filters? This would be good to know so that we could start anticipating that.
But it's going to be a team effort. All of the students work together to get it done.
Yeah, none of that is. That's all the responsible to site owner, not
right.
But Motorola contract.
But I suspect some direction needs to be put out to direct the site owner to take certain steps at a certain time, so we have a coordinated cleanup process that is done within a certain period of time under the same quality of In other words, if you put out, hey, this needs to be cleaned, this needs to be cleaned, this filters in this piece and that piece need to be changed, then that would be very helpful.
Well, through the chair, Mr. Woodall, what I've explained to everybody back in 1992 when it happened, P people think that's the one and done with the asphalt. It's not.
It's not.
That ash was around for months and months. It happened in August, and up until the snow fell, there was still ash everywhere. And even in the springtime, there was still ash around the buildings and blowing around and in the trees. So people need to realize we might get done with the ash, but we're talking months where we're going to have to keep going with the air filters. And if we need to get up in these sites with helicopters, is that helicopter company willing to risk a turbine engine sucking ash into it? Because that silica will adhere to the engines. And they've had airplanes on Mount Rudolph went out back in 89 that almost crashed because of the ash in the engine. So some of these helicopter-only sites, we need to take a look at if that helicopter company is willing to go up there also. So we've been brainstorming all of this going on there, but it's not a one and done. We're talking months of prep and extension of air filters and all the equipment.
Yeah, I'm just saying that as we are gaming the Mount Spur potential eruption, internally we don't have the answers to exactly what needs to be done to the LMR infrastructure that we own. We feel like we have some obligation to inform the infrastructure owners, the Army and the Air Force, kind of give them direction on what action to be taken. So we're looking to you guys to kind of help us determine that, and or we can reach out directly to Motorola, but we really need to have some clarity on that. And then, as you say, I think it's good to inform that this would be a continuing process through a period of time. We all know that when the ash does fall, it will fall in a kind of a designated area, so where the wind's blowing. So it's not going to hit the entire system.
Yeah.
So we're not going to, it's not as if we're having to service the entire system. So I don't think we're having to clean up anything up in Fairbanks or out in the valley, hopefully. Mostly Anchorage centered, and if the winds come that way. So I think the worst we got was a quarter inch of ash. So, I mean, we could get more, we could get less, we could get none. It all depends on the winds, but probably not a bad idea to have a before, during, and after checklist that we could all adhere to with some standard, if that's possible.
I'll work on that, Mr. Whittle.
The other thing that we've kind of talked about a lot is we need to know exactly who to call for the DOD sites. And I mean, we know who to talk to over at the meeting, so that they'll take care of their stuff. We need to know who on JBear is doing our window, or who on, you know, I don't know how much more they'd have to go outside of that one site, but because that's.
So do a, put out a RFI out of your office. I'll send it to all the, we don't expect it again to go outside here, but I'll send it to everybody and get them to respond to you.
Yeah. We've talked through some scenarios about, you know, even it's hard to shut sites down because if we shut sites down, you're dropping a microwave link, which is could rapidly impact, you know, throughout the whole system. So it's,
well, if we properly filter them, we filter the generators, and then we check and replace those filters often enough, we can keep the system operational. I mean, a majority of our systems, other than ALMR, we're looking at being able to sustain those operational by a series of cleaning and filter changes. So it would be an increased level of maintenance to ensure they continue to operate, but we have to have the materials on hand and understand the process that we need to go through to fix it. I mean, again, our guys don't know that equipment. If we send somebody over from CE or we send a Comscock water guy over, he's not going to know what filters need to be changed, where and how and what. So that's what we're looking at.
Okay. I'll take care of it, Mr. Whittle. Mm-hmm.
Everyone's looking at me now, so I've got nothing else to add.
Okay. Hi, this is Scott. Mr. Woodall, do you have anything to add, or should we wait till we get down to your regular DOD brief?
No, I'm done.
Okay, sir. Thanks.
I just brought it up. I was going to bring it up, but since Nick brought it up, I brought it up during his time. I stole his thunder.
Yeah. Totally okay. Let's see. Mr. Stormo, do you have anything else?
I guess the only other thing to add is part of the $24 million project. We are getting close to being done with that. Motorola's got some Juniper routers to go in this month at some of the state and local dispatch centers. There's a few places where they may not be able to do that because there's some connectivity difficulties to those locations that the site owners are aware of, and I believe are working through figuring that out. But we are getting close to being done with that. Paul left out the other cool thing we brought back from IWC was COVID. So. Hopefully that won't happen on the next conference, which is APCO coming up, or just for everybody else's awareness, there's a Motorola does a summit. They call it Motorola Summit 2025. It's the Motorola focused conference, primarily software, what it was, it was targeted towards all the dispatch centers and all the different applications and tools that you can get from Motorola, but they have added land mobile radio kind of track to it this year, so we may have somebody going down there because it is related to, I think, the fact that Smart Connect's FedRAMP approval, so I think they're trying to talk some more about those items. The testing that we've done on Smart Connect so far seems promising. We still are trying to figure out if we can make it work on a GCI network. Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. Using the Wi-Fi hotspot of a phone, we're not sure why that is, why some places work and some don't. But we'll keep trying different things and see what we can figure out, maybe document where we know it works or where it doesn't work.
Okay. Are there any other questions or comments before we move on to the representative updates? Okay, great. Well, I guess we'll move on to that. we'll hear from the council representatives. Starting with the state, are there any updates from Department of Public Safety?
This is John Rockwell. No updates from me. I don't know about Ben.
No, other than that, we've just continued to work on our our fleet map and trying to get working with the techs on experimenting with the Smart Connect, with the connection, the Wi-Fi connection to phones, which, as Scott Stormo pointed out, has worked some places and not others. And kind of view that as a stopgap measure just because of the limited battery life of the phone when it's operating that way, but it is an addition and an extra tool in the toolbox, so we're working on that.
Okay, excellent. How about DOT? Do you have any updates?
This is Henry Cole with DOT. I've got nothing to add at this time.
Okay. Mr. Clendenin, are you on the line?
Yes, Don.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Cole. We're going to move on to me. So I took off quite a few of our radios off the network in anticipation of switching over into TDMA-compatible radios. That's it for me. Carl, are you on the line?
I am on the line. And I have nothing really to add other than I'm getting excited that hopefully my radios will be coming soon.
I'm jealous. Okay. Moving on to the DOD. Is there anything from J-Bear? Sergeant, what's his name? I'm sorry.
Ray?
Yeah.
Anybody still on the line covering J-Bear?
He's still on the line, but
maybe muted.
Oh, okay. He may be having a technical issue. We can move on to Eielson and just come back to him.
All right. This is.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, you go ahead, sir.
All right. This is Master Sergeant Rodriguez from Eielson, and I've got Mr. Nate Adams here with me. We did also have the team from Aviat on the installation this past month. They were here from about the 10th to the 25th, completing the microwave installation up at Quarry Hill. And other than that, we're working our way through flash upgrades on a number of our radios for different units across the installation. And at the same time, we're working with the RAs to advocate for funding for purchasing the remaining radios in these next budget cycles. And that is it for us.
That's great news. Thank you, sir. Do we have anything? Do we have anything from the Army?
We're not on.
Okay. We can move on to the federal non-DOD representatives. Do we have anything from the Department of Justice? Okay. Not hearing anything. How about Department of Interior?
Hey, this is Eli Barry Garland from Department of Interior, sitting in for Ross Atkinson. We don't have any new news. We're still moving forward on our TDMA upgrades.
Great. Thank you, sir. What about all others? Is there Mr. Nelson or Carter on the line?
Yes, sir. Bob Carter here with the TSA. Nothing for the good of the order, sir. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Carter. And then municipal representatives. Have anything from Municipalities North?
Municipalities North doesn't have anything to add today. Thank you.
Yes, sir. How about Municipality Southeast?
Hello. I don't have any updates from the region, but locally here in Juneau, of the Public Safety Radio Network, we are in the process of doing some upgrades to our Aviat as well. That's going to start, I think, on Friday.
Oh, great. Well, thank you, Ms. Kawara. How about Municipality Central?
This is Tammy. I don't have anything today for the good of the order. Thank you. I'm not sure if Mr. Goodman is present.
Mr. Goodwin? Goodman?
He is right, not on the line.
Okay, he's not. Okay. Well, then we're moving on to new business. Does anyone have any new business to offer up?
Mr. Chair,
Mr. Richter has.
Go ahead, Mr. Richter.
Bruce Richter from CISA. Paul Fussy did a great job covering some of the events this month. It is National Emergency Communications Month, and a key highlight of that, of course, is recognizing the incredible work our 911 centers and the 911 telecommunicators, the people running those centers do. That is a tough job, and they really are the first responders. I would encourage people that can take advantage of the cyber-resistant 911 training workshop over at the State Crime Lab on Thursday and Friday morning from 9 to noon. There is a virtual option. Mary did a great job putting the details of that event on the LMAR website. And Don Lane, the state 911 coordinator, has more info as well. But particularly, there's a session on Friday morning where Andrew White is coming into town, and he's going to walk through, you know, a sandbox environment, an example of a real-world ransomware attack that has hit a 911 center, and kind of show you how that thinking adversary is looking at what they can do to disrupt and take down your center, and then extort cash from you to help you get back online. Just one other open source thing that came out in the last week in People's Republic of China. One of their engineers has applied for a patent on an undersea cable cutting device that's good down to 4,000 feet. And typically people may have thought that was a depth in the ocean that they didn't really have to worry about protecting undersea cable. But again, there's a thinking adversary out there that has developed a tool that can effectively take out undersea cable to that depth. And you can look on CNN, look on a couple of other open source sources for more info on that. And with that, I really encourage you to stick around for Mr. Rick Ramlo's brief. He gives a great brief. And that's the end of my update. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Richter. And there are two hands up. Let's see. I'm not able to see them right here. Do you have them, Mary?
Mr. Chair, this is Paul. Kyle Green had his hands up first.
Mr. Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to make a motion, and I'm acknowledging that this might facilitate discussion to clarify the training requested by Mr. John Rockwell under the action items. So the motion I'd like to make is to request training specifically on Smart Connect with focus on system limitations or maximum capabilities of that system and important configurations for subscriber unit needs to maintain system security under FedRAMP's approval. I know that's a mouthful. I can put that in the chat if necessary.
Please do. Yes, that would be very helpful. Mr. Green, Mr. Fussy, is this going to require a motion?
No, Mr. Chair, we can add that into the action item through the chair, Mr. Green. If we can work offline, and I can have that added onto that specific verbiage for you, so it'll be ready for next meeting.
Okay, thank you for that clarification. As we've been talking about it, I would love additional training on the APX Next radios, but that's a complementary technology to Smart Connect, and I'm interested in carving out Smart Connect because we've been talking about it a lot, and I think there's some things cooking that would be beneficial to make sure that the user council is on the same page as we learn more about how Smart Connect can be fit within the ecosystem of ALMR. So thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Green, for that. So we will add that to the action items. Is there anything else for the good of the order?
Mr. Chair, this is Paul Fussy. Mr. Brightman had his hand up.
Sorry, Mr. Brightman. Yeah, I can't see you, but please go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the invite today from Mr. Fussy. My name is Rob Brightman. I'm the Assistant Acting Patrol Agent in Charge for the U.S. Border Patrol's Bellingham Station. We have operational control over all of Alaska. We've been up there since about 2019. I was up in Anchorage at the ACIAC for about 2.5 years. And most recently, we added two additional agents to Juneau, so we have a footprint of about four. And it came to my attention recently that CBP, including OFO and Border Patrol, currently has an agreement between ALMR and all of CBP. And so we're in the process of securing two different talk groups, one for OFO, one for Border Patrol. And then we're going to be reaching out to all of the partners to get those talk share agreements in order. And then once we have those in hand, we will move forward with programming our radios. And so you'll most likely be seeing and hearing us on the network in the months to come. But that's pending your questions. That's all I have for the good of the order.
Well, thank you, sir. And thank you for updating us on that. Because I was unaware. So is anything else for the good of the order? I heard something. Go ahead, sir. Okay.
Mr. Chair, this is Paul Fussy. Nothing for the room here. Mary's just checking the chat, and it's nothing that we can see there, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Fussy. So hearing none, the next meetings are going to be May 7th and June 4th. So before we move on to the presentation, which I will attend, of course, I'll accept a motion and a second from any of the council members to adjourn this meeting.
John Rockwell, move to adjourn and ready for the presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Rockwell. And a second?
Cal Green, second.
Thank you, Mr. Green. And with that, this meeting is now adjourned. Mr. Fussy, we can move on to the presentation.
Okay, Mr. Chair, what we're going to do is Mary's going to stop recording and transcribing, and I'll get everything set.